could be a cousin, an uncle,
right,
nephew, you know, something like that. Okay. So that when Nebuchadnezzar appointed Tzidkiyahu, he was appointing also a descendant of King David. Okay? And he made Tzidkiyahu swear that he would remain loyal to him. But around the ninth year of Tzidkiyahu's reign, we find that there was a war party. They said, we want to be independent. We want to gain our freedom from Babylonia. And all the nations that surrounded Judah, including Egypt and Ammon and Moab, you know, all these groups, they said, you start a war against the Nebuchadnezzar, we're all going to join you in the fight, right? So, Yirmiyahu warned him, don't. He said, look, you made an agreement with the Nebuchadnezzar that you would remain loyal to him, and if you break the agreement, it's going to mean disaster. But, you know, the war party said, take that guy and throw him into prison. They wanted to kill him. They wanted to lynch him. So at this particular point, we read the very dramatic incident that the king himself stepped in order to save Yirmiyahu's life. Because he said, you know, many years ago, there was another prophet by the name of Micha. Micah in English, right? And among Micha's prophecies was also a statement which says, Sion Sodate Choresh. In other words, because of the sins of the people, Zion is going to become a plowed field. In other words, Yerushalayim will be destroyed. And they did nothing to him. They gave him freedom of speech. So I have to give Yirmiyahu also freedom of speech. Okay? And so he secretly got Yirmiyahu out of prison. And but, you know, the rebellion started. And, of course, needless to say, what happened? All the nations that had promised to be allied in the fight, they all chickened out. Okay? So that Yehuda was left standing alone in the fight, you know, for freedom. And the result was that Babylonia conquered it. Okay. Now, this time, what happened? They destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, right? Tzidkiyahu and his sons were captured. So they murdered, first of all, Tzidkiyahu's sons in the sight of his father. And then after that, they took Tzidkiyahu and they blinded him. And, you know, he died soon after, okay? Jehoiachin, in the meantime, was there in Babylonia in a prison, and he remained in prison. He remained in prison for many, many years until the time of Evil Merodach. But all the time, during the time of Nebuchadnezzar, he was still in prison. When Evil Merodach became the king, then he took pity upon Jehoiachin, and he released him from prison, and he gave him a pension over there. Okay?
Evil
Merodach, right. The Merodach is like Marduk, you know, right. Also one of the Babylonian kings.
That was his first name?
It's a double name, Evil Merodach.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, I see.
All right. Now, I just wanted to add one more thing. That is that in the eyes of many Jews, and particularly we find this in Yechezkel. Remember I said Yechezkel was among those who were exiled to Babylonia in the Golas Yehoiachin, when Yehoiachin was taken prisoner and sent into exile. Okay? In his eyes, Tzidkiyahu was never a legal ruler, as far as he was concerned. The real ruler of the Jewish people, the real king of the Jewish people, remained Jehoiachin, as far as he was concerned. Okay? So, and he was obviously reflecting the sentiment not only of Yechezkel, but he was also reflecting the sentiment of a good many other people who felt that Jehoiachin was the true and the legitimate ruler, whereas Tzidkiyahu was only a puppet put in over there by Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? All right, so now getting back to our text over here, as they try to... Yes?
Doesn't that create problems? Because when some people consider the year of the demise of the first kingdom, some people are going to say it's 597.
Right.
And then others are going to say it's 586, and you'd have to know where they're coming from to know...
Yeah, okay. With 586, this is pretty much the accepted date for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay.
So that would be Golasitio, if you want to give it an official name, okay? All right. Whereas the other one, the Golasitio Yachin, as we said, that affected some 40, 50,000 people who were exiled to Babylonia, but still the bulk of the people remained in the land. Okay? So when we talk about the date of Golas Bavel, of the Churban HaBayis, the date of the Churban HaBayis, in other words, the date of the destruction of the first temple, that's 586, approximately. Why do I say approximately? Because of the chronology, it all depends. We're going to see, sometimes they would count the same year twice, the middle of the year, okay? Do you count it as part of as the same year, or do you count, let's say the next event, even though it occurs in the middle of the year, as a separate year or not? And this was a common thing, you see. So as a result, you'll always find a discrepancy about a year or two. It extended even further than that. Some say that, for example, we think that we know all the dates when Yerushalayim was destroyed by the Romans. We always say 70, the common era. Right. But in reality, it might have been 69. Might have been. Might have been 68. It depends upon who is doing the calculating. Right. Well, okay. But you see, the problem is over here. What is the difference that it makes? The problem that it makes is simply this. Yirmiyahu made a prophecy that when 70 years are complete, right? Daniel also reaffirms the same thing. But were they talking about the same period of time or not? This is what the Gemara is trying to work out over here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, getting back to our text, all right? He says that, Okay, right. He's trying to figure out, first of all, if you remember, 7 and 8, right?
Right.
Okay. So he says, B'sheva l'kim b'sheho yokim, in other words, the seventh year of the conquest, when Yehoyakim was conquered, that actually means, threatened with distinction, but remember what happened at that time. It became Golas Yehoyachin, right? Because I say Yehoyachin reigned after Yehoyakim died, and he reigned for a very short while, and he was the one who was sent into exile. Now, that was B'sheva, the Kibush Yehoyakim, right? Golas Yehoyachin. Am I reading the same line over again?
No.
Yeah. right, yeah. Right, which would be the eighth year in the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. So now we have 7 for one, 8 for the other. All right? So that would mean that Golus, the first Golus, could either be counted as what? Either as the 7th or as the 8th, depending upon who you're counting from. Okay? Then, we continue. All right, then we have Gola Bishmona Esrei, right, in the 18th year, the Kibush Yehoyakim, which was Gola Sitkiyahu, right? This was the exile when Sitkiyahu, was king. Shehi Teshayasrei Nebuchadnezzar, and that would be the 19th year in the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, okay?
In other words, Nebuchadnezzar came into power 1 year.
1 year prior to Yehoyakim. Right, Yehoyakim, okay? The Omar Mar, as we have a sage who said, Shana Rishona Kibesh Ninveh. the first year of his reign, you know, then Nebuchadnezzar conquered Nineveh. Nineveh is, of course, the capital of Ashur, the Assyrian Empire, and the Assyrian Empire was conquered by the Babylonians, okay? So the first year of his reign, this is devoted to the campaign against Ashur, and he conquered it, okay? But I keep my finger out of place over here, okay? All right. Then, Shneya, in the second year of his reign, then what happened? Kibesh Yoyakim, all right? He conquered Yoyakim. Uchasiv, and we find a pasuk which says, Vayehi Bishloshim Mesheva Ashon on the Gods of Yochin, right? That it came to pass in the 37th year, beginning with the exile of Yochin, Melech Yehuda, right, the king of Yehuda, Bishneim Osor Chodesh, in the month of Adar, the Esim Chamish on the 25th day of that month, right? Nosa Evil Merodach Melech Bavel, as Rosh Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda. This was the time that Evil Merodach, the king of Babylonia, literally lifted up the head, but it means over here, in other words, he took him out of prison and gave him royal honors, okay? By Yotze Yosef Beis HaKeles, it's written, okay? And he took him out of the prison, and as I told you, he also gave him a pension for life, okay? So, what do we have now? It says, Tamana Yitlasin Visheva, okay? If we count 38, okay, and another 7, Sahare Abi Nuchamesh and Nebuchadnezzar. So this shows that Nebuchadnezzar reigned how many years? 45. Okay. And then we have the Esrim and Tlos Evel Merodach, and there are 23 years in which Evel Merodach ruled. Now, how do we know that? We don't have a pasuk which says specifically how many years it was, but it says, Gemara. This is a tradition. Here, Gemara means it's a tradition that we have, that this is how long he reigned, okay? V'tate di day, and now he is now reigning 2 years. We're talking about Belshazzar, right? So, Hoshivin, so that adds up to 70. So, what did Belshazzar do? He said, Omar, he said, Hashtar Vadai Tulo Mithrike, right? From this point on, it's obvious that they're not going to be redeemed, right? So therefore, Apik Mane Devei Mikdosho, so he took out the vessels of the Beis HaMikdosh, Ishtamish Behu, and he made use of them, okay? Hainu the Kamar lay Daniel, and this is what Daniel said to him, he says, We are More Shemaya Hisramamdu, right? You have extolled yourself above the God of heaven, above the ruler of heaven. In other words, you think that you're greater than the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? Umanoya Deveisei, I say you're Kodamach, and you've also caused the vessels of his holy temple to be brought before you and, of course, to be used. So, Chassid, and then we find written in the same chapter in Daniel, says, Beibalila, that very night, Katil Belshazzar Malka. Okay? The king Belshazzar was killed. Uchasiv, and then it's written also in Daniel, Vidaryavish Madoa Kibel Malchuse, that King Darius of the Medes is the king of the Medes. Remember, there are two nations, the Medes and the Persians. Poras and Madayu, Madayu Poras, okay? So, he was the king of the Medes, Modai, okay? So, Daryavish, the Mede, he says, Kibel Malchuse, he literally received the kingdom, in other words, he became king, Kivarshnin Shetin the Tartin, when he was 62 years old, okay? So, Omar, so again, we're coming back right now. To whom? Now we're coming back to Achashverosh. Okay? He says, Ihu mitoi toi. He made a mistake with his figuring. But Anoach Hashino Velotina. I'm going to do my own calculations. I will not be mistaken. Mi kasiv the Malchus Bovel? Is it written in the pasuk that we had before that it would take place in 70 years of the kingdom of Babylonia. In other words, beginning with what? Beginning with when Nebuchadnezzar began reigning as a king? No. It simply says, Libavel, 70 years, counting about Babylonia. Libavel, Samara Bavel. So, what is the meaning then of Bavel? So, it says it means Megalas Bavel. In other words, the 70 years have to be counted not from the time when Nebuchadnezzar began to reign as king, but rather from the time that the Jewish people, you know, were exiled and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Kama Betziron, and so therefore, how much is the difference between the one count and the other? He says, Tamani. Okay? It comes to an 8-year difference in the count. Okay? So, Choshiva Ayel Chilufayu, right? So, as a result, he calculated and he brought the following figures. Okay? Instead, it says, Chado de Belshazzar. If we count, alright, so Belshazzar is 1 year, okay? The Chomesh, there are Yerush, okay, and then there are 5 years in the reign of Darius, right? The Koresh, right? Metarti today. And, Chadad Belshazzar, 1 year, right? Then the Chomesh, the Yerush, the Koresh, because Koresh succeeded Dariush, okay? So that's a 5-year span that the two of them are involved. Betarti today, and two of his own reign, because it says, when did he make the party? In the 3rd year. So in other words, he didn't make it right at the beginning, but he made it in the 3rd year. So there were 2 years already that are gone. All right. That being the case, since we said there was an 8-year difference, and we've now figured out, you know, one for Belshazzar, five for Koresh and Dariush, right? And two for himself, and, you know, we get five and one, and that's, so we get 8 years, okay? That being the case, he says, all right, so now he says, Hoshivin, so now this adds up to 70 years, right? Kevin the Chodzik, inasmuch as he saw the Molo Shivin Velo Yifruk, that 70 years were now complete and the Jews still had not been redeemed, right? Had not been freed. So Omar, so he said, Hashtom Vadai Tulo Mifrike, right? So he said, all right, so now certainly the Jewish people are not going to be redeemed. So, Apik Moni Devei Miknosho, so what did he do? Same thing, Belshazzar. He took out the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, and he made use of them at his banquets. So when this happened, so Satan came and he danced together with them. The Horag is Vashti, and he incited what happened, that Vashti should be killed, right? So now this authority says, right? Well, but didn't he do a good job of calculating, right? So he says, he also made a mistake in his calculations. The boy because he still should have counted from the time when Yerushalayim was destroyed, not from Galus Yehoyachin, but from the time that Yerushalayim was destroyed. So it's a span, right? So Kama Bitsiran, so now being the case, what is now the difference that's missing? So it says Chadesar, or others say Treyasar, in other words, it's either an 11 or 12 year difference. All right. Ihu Kama Moloch, how long has he been king? He says Arbesa. Okay? 14. So, by base on the day, alright? In the 14th year of Achashverosh, you know what he should have done? He should have built the Beis HaMikdash. He should have. So, Aloma, how do I know this? He says, Kisiv, because we find a pasuk that's written in the book of Ezra. And what does it say over there? It says, Bedayin, at that particular time, Betelas Avidas Beis Elohod Yerushalayim. Okay, the work of rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim came to a halt. Okay? Which means what? Which means that he should have continued, he should have given permission to the Jews in line with the decree of Cyrus, right? To rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. He should have continued it. Instead, what did he do with the bandit? He told them to stop the building over there. So,
Doctor, I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about history, but
yeah.
Nehemiah was instrumental in getting the Beit Mikdash Sheni built, right? Correct? No?
Okay. What we have to do, okay. No, we have to again review in our minds exactly what took place, okay?
Okay.
We find that the first group of people who came back to Eretz Israel after the decree of Cyrus permitting the Jews to return and to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, you had a group led by Zerubbabel, who was a descendant of King David. In other words, he's a member of the royal family, okay? As well as we had, the high priest over there, okay? Yehoshua Kein Godel, okay? And we still had three prophets in those days, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, okay? At the time of the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the work got started very, very slowly. As we saw, the Shomronim, the Samaritans, created all kinds of difficulties. And for example, the Ammonites, who had slain Gedaliah, who had been appointed as the governor of Yehuda, they continued to make trouble. It's a guy by the name of Sanballat who was a big pain in the neck and so on and so forth. Alright, so at any rate, the work lagged behind and came sort of to a halt. Okay? Now, Ezra, of course, was busy teaching the people of Israel Torah and getting the people, to be committed, to making the Torah way of life their way of life. One of the big problems that he had to face was, for example, the problem of intermarriage. Many Jews had intermarried, okay? And when they intermarried, what do you think happened? So they worshipped the idols, the gods, of their wives. The wives, they peddled their religion to them, okay? Incidentally, King Solomon was no stranger to that either. He also did many centuries before that. He wanted to please all his wives, so he installed the shrines to all their deities and so on and so forth, okay? All right. Sometimes Shlomo HaMelech didn't seem so wise. At any rate, all right. So, then we read in the book of Nehemiah that the word got back. Nehemiah was a high official at the court of the king of Persia. The high official.
Persia, of Cyrus.
Not of Cyrus, no. This is already Artaxerxes, okay, or Artaxerxes, okay? And he was a high official, and one day the queen saw that he looked very, very sad. She says, "Why are you so sad?" So he says, "Because a messenger got back to me from Eretz Israel, and he told me that the work has stopped. The people have lost their zeal for rebuilding, and they faced all kinds of problems." So the king appointed him governor to go to Eretz Israel. So actually he came after Ezra.
Right. Okay.
But the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, you see, they're sort of joined together. At one time they're considered one book, okay? So this is what the story is with Nehemiah. He was not among the original people to return, but he came as a governor. And then, of course, when he saw what was happening over there, so he told the Jewish people, "We got to continue with the work. He had to get a royal decree permitting him to do it. He had to tell the people, we got to fight if necessary, but we have to continue the work. And so what happened? They worked 12-hour shifts. 12 hours they worked on building, and the other 12 they stood guard. And Jews were prepared to fight in order to make sure, you know, that the enemy would not prevent them from carrying on the work. So that finally, after all this, the Beis HaMikdash was built. And as we have a description in Haggai, the people, there were still a few people left who had seen the first Beis HaMikdash. And they wept. Why did they weep? They wept because they remembered the glory of the first Beis HaMikdash, and this was a little place. It only became bigger as time went on, and particularly in the days of Herod, when he added more to the Beis HaMikdash and beautified it. Okay? So that's a long time after, obviously. Okay? Alright, so that's the story. Okay? Alright.
Yeah. How far after Xerxes was Ahasuerus? Was he the next king?
He followed. Right. That's a little mixed up. What we really have to do is to take a look at Divrei Hayomim, and particularly to take a look at the last chapters of Malachim and so on, okay? And the latter prophets, and see, you know, more or less what the chronology is over there. Of course, it is a little bit confusing.
Why then, I'm getting everybody off track, but why then in the Megillah is there no mention of Yerushalayim or the Beit HaMikdash or Nehemiah or Ezra or any of this? It's all Mordecai and Esther. You know,
correct.
But Galus me Yerushalayim from
right.
And it's as if all this history was just passed over.
Correct. The answer has to be, you ask a pertinent question, I don't know whether there's a pertinent answer or not, but I'll attempt an answer. That the event of trying to slaughter off the entire Jewish population throughout the kingdom of Persia, this was so momentous an event that it sort of overshadowed everything else. So that's all that I could say at this time.
Also, it's the majority of the population.
Yeah, good point.
Of the Jewish population at the time were in Galut. They were not there.
Yeah, that's true. We know that from the book of Ezra, that only some 40,000 Jews came back to Eretz Yisrael. And obviously, the Babylonian Jewish population was much bigger than that. And that created big problems as far as the Jewish people are concerned, because if you don't have enough Jews in Eretz Yisrael, then they are at the mercy of the other people. Okay?
History
absolutely repeats itself. No question. Right. Okay, I'll just finish the last few words, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, Omar Rava, said, Shonim and Kutois Ha'adu. In other words, the discrepancy may also be due to the fact that we're not dealing with whole years, but with partial years. As I said, you know, when you would start, when one king's reign, for example, would come to an end, the next one would begin, but they counted it as a separate year and said the same year. Okay. We shall okay, so tonight is the 5th of December in the year 2001. We are currently about to begin right now Megillah Daf Yud Beis Omid Aleph. Okay, and so we're going to finish first of all the question about the discrepancy in numbers that we had in the previous Daf, where, as we saw, there was a difference of 1 year. One said 7, one said 8, one said 17, one said 18, and then things like that and so on. Okay? So, how do they account for it? So we said, Shonim Mikutos. In other words, the years were broken up so that they used partial years and counted them as whole years. Good evening. Right. All right, we're ready for Yud Beis Omid Aleph. Okay. So the Gemara says now, Tanya Nami Hachi, yeah, it says, not only that, but we do have another teaching that agrees with this. It says, V'yod Shona Acheres the Bovel, right, that the Oma Do Yovesh V'hish Lima. Okay, so it says, V'yod Shona Acheres, there's still one more year left, and the result is that then Do Yovesh, let us, you know, Darius in English, right, or Darius, whichever way you want to pronounce his name, so he came and he completed it, and what did he complete? He completed the count of the 70 years. So that confirms the fact that they also counted partial years as whole years, and that accounts for the difference, and there's no discrepancy in final analysis. Omar Rava. So Rava said as follows. He says, Avto Niel To'a Bahai Chushbeda. Says, you think that only Belshazzar made a mistake in the count? Or do you think that only Achashverosh was wrong in his counting? He says, even Daniel himself was also wrong in his counting. How do we know that? So he quotes a pasuk from Daniel. It says, Dikshiv, it's written, it says, Bishono Achaz Lemolcho, which means, and one year, literally, meaning, of course, the first year of his reign. So, Ani Daniel Binosi Basforim. I, Daniel, looked into various books. In other words, trying to figure out, you know, when the end, when the Geula would come. Okay? So it says, Bidik Omar Binosi. So, inasmuch as it says, I looked into it, so Miklalitor, from this we see that he too made a mistake in his counting. Mikol Mokom, in any case, the Gemara concludes this little incident, says, Kosher Kreya Hadode. We have, nevertheless, a difficulty to reconcile these two psukim with each other. After all, in Yirmiyahu, what we find, Ksiv Melos Lebovil, when it shall be completed unto Babylonia. Uchasiv, and then in Daniel, what do we have over there? It says the Chomos Yerushalayim. The 70 years would be after the what? The destruction of Yerushalayim. So Omar Rava, so Rava says, well, in reality we still figure it out according to Melos the Bovil, 70 years, but it says the latter one, it says the Fekido Be'alma. This means that only that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam decided literally to remember that, you know, the time had come for the Jews to be redeemed. The Hainu Dichsiv, and therefore this is what we find written, where it's written in Ezra, for example, although we have parallels in other books in the Bible. It says, Ko Amar Koresh Melch Peros, thus saith Cyrus, the king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the world has the Lord God of heaven given unto me. And he literally remembered me, but it really means in this case who he charged me, okay? To build a temple in Yerushalayim, okay?
Why is it so important to prove the number of years?
They're always well. First of all, they want to account for the fact, as we pointed out last week, and as I mentioned tonight before you came. Okay. The Gemara is drawing a comparison between Achashverosh and between Belshazzar. Okay. Belshazzar thought that he knew what the 70 years were, right? And so therefore he figured 70 years had passed, the Geula had not come for the Jewish people, and therefore he could do whatever he wanted to do with the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay?
That was the purpose of it.
Right. So now...
But he did it anyway.
He did it, but he was punished.
So,
okay? Babylonia fell because of that. He was killed and Babylonia fell, okay? Then... along comes Achashverosh, and he also does figuring, and according to his figuring, that now 70 years have just passed, and you know, Bashatza made a mistake, but I know how to count better, and therefore I see that the Jews are not redeemed, and therefore I'm going to show myself even greater than Bashatza. I'm going to take the kalim of the Beis HaMikdosh and I'm going to use them to make a big feast. Okay?
But they did it already. They had already done it.
Bashatza
did it already.
Bashatza, right. Bashatza did it, but remember, he was the king of Babylonia.
Yeah.
Here we have the king of Persia. Figures, you know, Persia.
Well,
he's a bigger knocker,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Not only that, okay. The predecessors, like Dariovish, for example,
yeah,
it says that he had, 120 provinces, okay? Whereas what do we find over here? We find that Ahasuerus is the ruler of 127 provinces.
Yeah,
therefore,
lying.
He figures
yeah.
he's a bigger man. Right, okay. Right. So now we're saying that Daniel too made a mistake with his counting. Because he was also off. He expected, you know, that the Gula would come and hadn't come yet in his time. Okay?
Excuse me, who made
yeah.
the prophecy that the Gula was going to come in 70 years?
Originally, it's in Yirmiyahu. That's where we find the pasuk where it says, you know, that when 70 years of Babylonia will be complete, then, the Jews will return once more to their land. That was the original prophecy. Okay?
Babylonia,
meaning
Babylonia,
Persia. Yeah, right, of course, because there was a whole succession. I mean, after Babylonia, first of all, Babylonia did what? They conquered Assyria. So now Assyria, Asher, was part of the Babylonian Empire. Along came the Medes, and they conquered, right? And so now it was part of the Medes, but the Persians conquered the Medes, and so now the Persians are the bosses.
So when did
okay?
Cyrus come along?
Cyrus, he was the king of Persia who had conquered also the Medes previously, and he inherited the fact that the Medes had conquered Babylonia.
Right.
Okay.
So he's the one that sent the Jews back.
Yes, he gave permission to the Jews to go back.
The other question is.
Yes.
If he's counting, Ahasuerus is counting 70 years,
yes.
he was well aware
yeah.
of the Jewish population within his realm.
Yeah.
He was well aware that there was a Jewish population within his realm.
Yes.
We are trying to prove the Chemia's prophecy to be accurate. Is that what we're trying to do?
We want to prove. I mean that
the prophecy that the Gula would come in 70 years.
That stands and that's true. Right.
That
but
happens,
how you figure the 70 years? That everybody has a different opinion.
Did
Cyrus?
Yeah.
Did Cyrus come after Ahasuerus?
According to the chronology here, yes. Yeah. Right.
Was he son of Esther?
Not necessarily. We have problems with the whole chronology. I have to tell you about that.
Whether he was the son of Esther, Cyrus.
Cyrus was the son of Esther?
Well, correct.
Did she have son with Ahasuerus?
According to one rumor, she did. I mean, it's never mentioned, you know. I mean, all these are legends, you know.
How would he come before Cyrus? Cyrus was the one that...
he was king of Persia.
No, but I mean, Cyrus was the one Belshazzar. So he would have to come before...
It was Darius the Mede.
So he would come, Koresh would come before Ahasuerus.
From the point of view of chronology, there's no question. But, sometimes, chronology takes second place to bringing out a point that they want to make over here.
325 or something, George? I always thought this story was somewhere around 325 before the Common Era.
What, the story of Esther? No, it should be closer to about 500 or something. Right.
Okay.
500.
Yeah, that's a couple of
years.
Yeah, 500
a number of places. Yeah.
Before the common era,
before
right.
Era.
It was 500 before the common era.
Yeah.
I'm losing chronology altogether here.
All right,
but
remember.
That was 500 before the common era.
Yes.
And he was followed by Cyrus, who let them go back. It doesn't compute.
That's what I'm trying to
telling
say.
You.
That's exactly what I'm trying to
yeah.
say.
I am telling you that the chronology here is not 100%. Aye, aye, aye. Okay. All right.
This is what I was saying. Because
yeah,
yeah, they're leaving out,
yeah, right.
they're leaving out the rebuilding
yeah.
of the Second Temple.
Right, right. And you see, the other problem is, of course, I mean, we have to remember that we have over here a picture of the Book of Esther through the prism of Agatha, you know, through stories, legends, whatever
yeah.
you want to call them. I don't like to use the word legend because it gives the impression that they're talking fairy tales, okay?
Yeah.
But these represent different traditions that have grown up among the various sages concerning each and every pasuk in the beginning. As we saw, we started with Vayehi, Bimei, right, and then Achashverosh. What was Achashverosh? He thought he was, you know, he was a brother to the head man, in other words. But according to others, Achashverosh stood for the fact that it's Och for Rosh. In other words, he brought about woe and poverty among the people in his kingdom and things and so on and so forth. Okay. And then Hu Achashverosh, why did it say Hu Achashverosh? Because it shows us that what he was, he remained the same kind of a character throughout his lifetime and so on. And they bring similar examples, you know, for evil, as for example, let's say, Esav. Who Esav, right? He was an Esav to begin with, he was an Esav afterwards. But on the other hand, if he was a good guy, like who Avraham, and in that particular case, and Avraham was good to begin with, and he was good right throughout his life and so on. And this is the way we went, pasuk by pasuk,
so
word
going,
by word.
Are they going to go
and
continue
one, yes.
through the whole Megillah that way?
Well, it's sort of a running commentary on the Megillah at this point, but they're not doing each and every word.
They're not doing each and every
no.
word.
No, they're not doing each and every word, but they take certain words, certain things that they are going over, okay?
Are these traditions that were built up?
Excuse me, yeah.
And they seem to have come from, there are different strains.
Yes, well, we'll see also the differences of opinion among
right.
The sages, you
but
know.
Didn't these come about like stories that went from generation to generation in some way? It isn't like
yeah, it
500 years after the fact they began to think about it. Weren't they carrying forward traditions that were told from previous generations to the...
Yeah, probably a good deal of it for the...
There had to have been,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't
good
coming
deal
out of the
it's
air.
Probably in that nature. Yeah, I have no doubt about it.
They were carrying on an oral
yeah.
tradition.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I have no doubt about that.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, but it's like the game of telephone, you
yeah.
know, from, you know, something gets lost in the translation or gets changed somewhat.
Okay.
But they also insist on certain proofs.
Okay.
They put something in there, they insist on some proof.
Yeah.
Either by a pasuk in the Torah.
Yeah,
or
right, of course.
Or
yeah.
yeah, right.
Well,
they tried to find
support.
Yeah,
yeah,
they tried to find support.
I mean, you just don't accept rumor.
Right. Okay. All right, let's not get lost so much on this one particular point that we failed to move on a little, okay?
Well, the whole point of understanding
yeah,
one
right,
is it gives us
right.
a basis for understanding the others, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, okay, as I said, I mean, Agarata is Agarata and Halacha is Halacha, you
yeah.
know. By Agarata, we are not governed. We are governed by Halacha, you know what the...
Well, at this point,
yeah,
we're doing
Agarata. Agarata means, like, over here, this
sure.
kind of interpretation
yeah.
and so on.
Right.
It's not a Halacha over here. You don't find a law mentioned over here. You understand?
But it's so we're not basing... starting with a law and surrounding it with a garden.
That's correct. We're not
we're
at this,
not
point.
This point.
No.
Okay.
No.
Which is
to a certain extent, I have to tell you that Tractate Megillah is unusual in the amount of pages of a garden that we hang
yeah.
over here.
The usual
we have plenty
be.
Of Agarata when we studied Brachas, for example. We had also quite a bit when we studied Sota. we did have that. This is another one, which we had a lot of Haggadah. So, okay? But when it comes to halacha, naturally that's going to be like what we had at the very beginning. In other words, what day do we read the Megillah?
Yeah.
Right? What is the difference between a city surrounded by a wall as compared to a city which is not surrounded by a wall, the days of Yehoshua bin Nun and so on and so forth. So that, and what are, you know, the business that we have to give, we have to have a surah on Purim, we have to listen, you know, we have to hear the reading of the Megillah, we have to give gifts to the poor, right? And so these things, you know, that we had, that's the halacha concerning Purim. Okay, and we'll have more halachas yet. We'll not finish with it. Okay? All right. Yeah. Okay. Particularly, you'll see this quotation that we're now going to have from Yeshayahu. Okay? All right. So, first of all, it says, Ezra has the following pasuk. It says, Ko amar korish melech paros, right? Let's say Cyrus, the king of Persia, Ko amam lechosos the son of Yeshem and the kei hashemayim, all the kingdoms of the earth has the God of heaven given unto me, the who pokat alai lefnos lo bais mishalayim. And he charged me, or he remembered me, because the question is how do you translate the word pokat, right? To build for him a temple in Yerushalayim. Okay? Yeah. All right. Sure. We're on Yud Bez, Amen Aleph, right? Okay. And we're about to hit the long lines. Okay?
Okay.
Dorash Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda. So Rav Nachman, the son of Bar Chisda, the son of Rav Chisda, gave the following drasha. Remember, you know, Dorash means that you take a pasuk and you derive a teaching. Okay? What is the meaning of the pasuk that we have in Yeshayahu, where he says, Ko amar Hashem nimshicho nekoresh, thus saith the Lord, right, to his anointed one, to his Messiah, if you wish, to Cyrus, Asher hechizakti bimino, whom I have strengthened his right hand, right? The chiyu hu yivne basi, and he is the one. Let's see what happened. Did I skip a line over here? Yeah. No. Right. Okay. The pasuk against Hashem talking being Mino. All right. Now, the point is Yeshayahu praises Cyrus as what? As the anointed one of God. Okay. Praises him to that extent. Okay. So now, the question that the sages ask, you know, is, after all, is he the Rebbe that he's the Mashiach? It's possibly going to be a Mashiach or something like that. So therefore they give a different twist to it, okay?
Kings were anointed.
Of course, kings, and this is what it means. It means that the Beit Shalem anointed Cyrus, he gave him this special mission
to
do what? Right, to not only be a king, but also to enable the Jews once more to return to Israel and to build the temple again, okay? Yeah, but it's pastish to call him as Mashiach, all right. So it says, Vachi Koresh Mashiach, oh yeah. What do you mean? You mean to tell me that Koresh was the Messiah? Hello, Maloya Koresh Baruch Hu, but rather we have to interpret the pasuk as follows. This is what the Rabbeinu Shalom said, it says to Mashiacho, right? To his anointed one, right? The Koresh, to Cyrus. So, therefore, Limshicho means the Mashiach. Rabbeinu Shalom says to the Messiah himself, the Mashiach is waiting in the wings, you're supposed to go and redeem the Jewish people, and instead you're staying back over here in the wings. He says, Kovil ani lechal Koresh. Now I am complaining to you concerning Koresh. Ani omarti, I said, and as I thought, Rabbeinu Shalom says, that hu yivne beiso v'yikavis kul yosai, that he would build my temple, right, and he would gather my exiles back to Eretz Yisrael. Who amar, yet what did Cyrus say? Cyrus said, Mi bochem mekolam over y'all. He said simply, who among you, among all my people? So let him go up. In other words, I give permission, you can go. But does it say that Cyrus actively went and he built the Beis HaMikdash and he told Jews, all the Jews have to go back to Eretz Israel or anything like that? Not at all. Okay? So that was the complaint that the Rebbeinu Shalom gave to the Mashiach. We missed the boat. Okay? We missed the boat.
What does it say, the complaint?
He complains to the Mashiach. No. He complains to Mashiach concerning Cyrus. So he doesn't want to say that Cyrus is the Mashiach. You understand? If you read Yeshayahu, you'll see he praises Cyrus tremendously because Yeshayahu put his hopes
in the return of the Jews
to Eretz Israel and to the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, you see. Yeah. This is what his hopes were. So this is why he was.
That's not Jeremiah.
No. Isaiah.
Isaiah?
Yeah, Yeshayahu is Isaiah.
Isaiah.
Yeah.
Isaiah was there at that time? No.
Well,
Isaiah is a much earlier.
Okay, so therefore we say, the book of Isaiah, okay, contains 66 chapters, okay? Some say that 39 were by a first Isaiah, and from 40 on it's the second Isaiah, but I don't want to go into this business because I don't have to tell you, not everybody accepts it, okay? Not everybody accepts this idea. So therefore, how do we who believe in the unity of the book of Yeshayahu interpret? So we say, he prophesied the Ruach HaKodesh. In other words, he had the Holy Spirit within him so that he could foretell, he could see what would be happening several generations after he had passed away. Okay? All right. Now, we continue with the exposition, okay? So, what does it say? If you remember, it says that he made a party, right? Made a banquet in Shushan. And who did he invite, first of all? Chel Poras Umodai, right? In other words, the army of Persia and Media. Okay?
Yeah. Right.
And the next word is hapartamim, which we have to translate as being like the satraps, the governors, okay, of the various provinces. Yeah. Uksiv, and then it's written, we find the Malche Mordechai Forest. Later on we find that it's written, that the judgment should be according to the judgment of kings of Media and Persia. So notice, in other words, that first it says Persia and Media, and now it says what? Media and Persia. Okay? So, Omar Rava. So Rava said, you know why you have one mention and then the next one and then the reverse the next time around? He says, Isnuye Istu Bahadode, he says, they made an agreement between them, Imin on Malche. If we supply the kings, right, the menachem parchi, then in that particular case, then the governors will come from you. In other words, let's say if we Persians may have our king, then we'll give you the governorship. Okay.
You share power.
Huh?
Share power.
Yeah, we'll share. Nice. Me menachem malchei, right? And if the kings come from you, then minana parche, then in that case we will have the governors, okay? Okay, incidentally, notice, I mean, that we have different words over here, some from Persian derivation, others from Greek, and parche is actually from the Greek. Epi in Greek means upon, on, right? And the arche, this means somebody who's at the head, who's first in the line, and something like that.
Archbishop.
Yeah, like Archbishop and so on. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but this is not. No, this is Greek. Epi-arche. Okay? Right. Yeah. All right. Whereas Paktamim, this is derived from a Persian word. Okay? Yeah. the Greek translation of Parthenon uses the word satrap for that.
Well,
they
use it in Megillah,
yeah,
too.
Satrap.
Is it used in Megillah, too?
They use satrap in Megillah.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, because, you know, that's the closest to it. And this is actually, if you ever read, for example, Xenophon. Xenophon lived at the time of King Cyrus, okay? He wrote a book called the Sarapadia, which means, you know, how Cyrus raised his kids and so on and so forth, okay? And we find the word satraps over there, okay? That's the way that the Greek used them.
Written in Greek? Bill?
What?
Sure.
Xenophon wrote in Greek, yeah.
Parthenon, which we now define as governors.
Mm-hmm.
The Romans called the Persians, who they're never able to conquer,
yeah, they called them Parthians, correct.
That has nothing to do
with... That has to do with their interpretation of Paras.
Thank you.
I mean, we say Persia, but they said Parthia.
Thank you.
Now, the Megillah continues. It says, "Baharoso es osher kevo malchuso." You know, he made this great big banquet. What did he want to do? He wanted to show off, right? Baharoso, the wealth and the glory of his kingdom. Okay. So, Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina. So, Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina said, "Melame." It teaches us that what? Shelovash Big Day Kahuna. That Achashverosh actually put on the garments of the priest, probably of whom? Of the high priest, because the high priest, you know, had much more elaborate garments, okay? How do we know this? So he says, look, take a look. Ksir, it's written, okay? Hocha, in our pasuk over here, in Megillah, it says what? Yikar Teferes Gedulaso. In other words, the glory of the beauty of his greatness. Okay? Uksiv Hasan. And it's written in the Torah in reference to the garments of the high priest of the Kohen Gadol, it's written Lechovod Ulesiforis. So from the very fact that we have the word Lechovod in Teferes, particularly the word Teferes, so we know that what did the guy do? What did Achashverosh do? He put on the garments of the high priest. Now, of course, this is in line with what we said also, that they're trying to show that Achashverosh also used the various vessels of the Beis HaMikdash in order to show his contempt for the Jewish people and to show what a great guy he was, okay? What a powerful person. Alright, then the Megillah continues, "Ubimlos Hayomim Ho'ela." And at the conclusion of these days, so Rav and Shmuel, there's a difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel. Chad Omar, one of them said, you know, said Achashverosh Melech Pikeach Hayah. He says Achashverosh was a wise king. He was a wise person.
But
then they were kept in the treasury, okay, the royal treasury, so that when the next kingdom took over, they took over the treasury, right? Yeah. Okay.
I have another question.
Yeah.
Following on that, okay, Darius.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cyrus, of course, gives the Jews the right to go back,
right,
to Eretz Yisrael, but he doesn't let them take the Clay Kodesh with them.
They remained in the royal treasury. Okay, right. And that's where Achashverosh got them after Doyovish, you know, passed away. Okay, this is the idea. All right. So the Jews, you know, they still didn't have them. Okay.
Yeah, they never got them though. They had to make others.
All right. So at any rate, now, there's a famous machlokes, difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel. One of them says that Achashverosh was a wise person. V'chadamar, and the other one says what? Melech tipesh hoya, he was a foolish king. Okay. Tipesh. It's a good Hebrew word which means foolish, a fool. Okay. All right.
So the Yeshua.
Of course.
Well,
all the good words in Yiddish come from, or almost all the good words in Yiddish come from Hebrew. Okay. They give the real flavoring. What do you think? German gives flavoring.
That's right.
To have a real Jewish flavor, you have to have Hebrew.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Shittim is also.
What?
There is a word in Hebrew, shittim.
Shittim? No, no, no. Shittim are trees. Cashew trees. Yeah, but I'm thinking of the word shotim. Shotim, right. Yeah. Shotim is a fool, right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Hedyot is not, is Hedyot really, in the language of the Talmud, Hedyot means somebody who is not either a king or somebody who's not a Kohen or he's not the Kohen Gadol or something like that. He's a commoner. And this is really the original idea of the Greek word idiotis, which is the word Hedyot, you say. Yeah.
And what about Tembel? Where did this, originate from?
Tembel. Probably an Arabic word.
Aramaic?
No, Arabic.
Arabic.
Yeah,
Arabic?
They took some Arabic words though.
Tembels also means a fool, right. An idiot.
Right. And also they used to wear those funny hats that they called Kova Temple.
Kova Temple, right.
Right.
They were very popular
right.
In the
70s. Okay, to continue. Alright, so how do we know that Ahasuerus either was A, wise king, or B, he was a stupid king? So they each defend their point of view over here. Okay? Okay. Mando Amar Melech Bikei Achoyo. Right, the one who says that he was a wise king, he says, Shapir Ovat. He really did the right thing. The Korev Rechika Bereisho, the first he asked, you know, those who were far away in his kingdom to come, and he made a party for them, right? Divinei Mose, because he figured that as far as the locals are concerned, as far as the people in his hometown, in other words, the people of Shushan, he says, Kol Amos Deboi, Nefayas Lahu. Whenever he felt that, you know, he had to give in to them, to yield to them or something, so then he could do it easily, he didn't have to. Whereas those who were far away felt he wanted to get the assurance of their loyalty and their gratitude to him. Okay?
Politics.
Right, of course, politics. So, Umando Matipe Shoya, and the one who says that Ahasuerus was a fool, he says, first he should establish a home base. Okay? Get the people locally to support him. The Imordube, Hanach, right? Hanach have a kayomi bahadeh, because if the others, meaning, you know, those who are far away, would rebel against, you know, they tried to gain their freedom from Persia, they rebel against him, but at least he still had what? He still had those who were near him to support him. Right. Shalu Talmidei was Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So now we have another famous quotation.
No, the argument is never really settled, is it?
No, it's not settled. Tell you a little joke that I read years ago. I have a little book that I got when I graduated the Hunts Point Jewish Center. Some stories, classic Jewish stories, jokes that somebody wrote in California at that time. One of the first Rabbonim out in Los Angeles compiled. At any rate, the story goes as follows. It says that a machaber, you know, an author, you know, that an author always wanted to find a haskama, in other words, to find a rav who would say that I read this book and I recommend it, okay? So he wrote a book, and what was the book about? It was about the Megillah, okay? And so he came to the Rav, and he showed him the book, and the Rav was not very happy with it. So he didn't want to give the Haskama. So this man says to the Rav, he says, but look, I show you how wise a person Ahasuerus was. And so the, he says, you know, I could show you other books which also, you know, have the same point of view as mine. So the Rav didn't know exactly what to do. He says, I'll tell you. You, says, when they make out Ahasuerus to be a great man, a diplomat or something, no, Mela, okay. But I'm not telling the story very well. But he says, all right. He says, right, I remember now. He says, you know, I've written the book in which I show that Ahasuerus is a great diplomat, okay? And the Rav said, but I see from your book, you know, that you make him into a tipish, right, into a fool. So the guy said, but my commentary is as great as the Malbim. The Malbim is one of the more, you know, one of the very great, more recent commentators
on the Bible, right.
So he says, okay, I can forgive, he says, the Malbim. Okay. I ruined the story. He wrote a book which was a commentary on Mishlei, on the Book of Proverbs. Okay?
Now I got it. Book of Proverbs.
I haven't read this in decades, you understand. Tried to recall the story now after many decades.
Yeah, he's talking about years ago.
Right. He wrote a book about, you know, Mishlei, the Book of Proverbs of Shlomo HaMelech. So the Rav refused to give him the Haskama, you know, to approve, because he says, you know, I just can't do it. So he says, why? My book is as good as the Malbim's commentary. So he says, I'll tell you, the Malbim, he made Ahasuerus into a wise man, into a diplomat. Okay, he had his reasons. But you took Shlomo HaMelech, you made him into a fool. How can I give my God? Made him into a
Dr. Haskama, is that with a Sama? So like Haskama also mean like
agreement? Haskama to agree, right.
Okay, Haskama would be
Right. Right, in this particular case, it means like the approval. Take a look at traditional Sfarim, and you'll see that at the beginning of it, they look for a Haskama from famous Rabbi. All right. So, Shalu Talmidim was Rabbi Shimon Yochai's Talmidim asked him the following question. They said, Neiman is Chayvus Anim Shal Yisrael Shaboyse Ador Kloyo. Says, why is it that the Jews, it says the enemies of Israel, but in reality, this is an expression that the Gemara uses from time to time, because they don't want to say the Jewish people themselves, they did bad, so they use the expression, Sodehem Shal Yisrael, the enemies of Israel. Okay? All right. So, but the meaning obviously is why did the Jews in that generation, right? Why did they deserve kloya? In other words, why did they deserve to be wiped out, to be destroyed? Okay. Yeah.
Well, in a way, they are enemies of Israel because they're bringing Tzoros on their own people.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We understand. Right. So Amar Lahem, of course, we can point out to some people in our own community who are also Sanehem Shal Yisrael, even though they're born Jewish too, unfortunately. Right. Certainly, if you judge from some of the things I heard just in the last day or two, you know, reports of a meeting here, reports over there, that you wonder.
Things going on within the community?
In
Northampton,
the
they had what is rabbis. Yeah, I don't know where, but somewhere in Northampton, under the inches and so on. Yeah,
well, I don't think he was quite as economic,
collective punishment.
Yeah, I hear as much as that going on among the.
Plus, a point of view,
John. Yeah, it's a point of view, but democratic. Okay, but the question that we always have to ask is, Since it's good for the Yid, no, it's schlep for Yid, right? Is it good for the Jew? Is it bad for the Jew?
It's good for the Jews to have every point of view expressed, and then we can counter it and show how
but if we can counter. But I mean, lots of times they're not counted. That's the problem.
Well, this one was
people hear something, so you know they automatically accept it.
Right.
Well, I watched the BBC news tonight, and of course, you know, you have what's her name, the Mashaf over there, Hanana Shrawi.
Yeah.
She's good.
She's very. I wish we had someone like her.
Yeah.
She's very
unfortunately, articulate. Our spokespeople are not as good.
No,
I agree with you.
She's
really
clever. But you know, this just to waste more time. This rabbi, his big thesis was, he said, look, you know, Israel should strike a terrorist, but we shouldn't have collective punishment.
All right. So the question was asked then by the Talmidim of Shimon ben Yochai, right?
Why
is it that the Jews, that particular generation, deserve to be exterminated, right? Deserve to be destroyed. So, Omar Lahem, so he said to them, Imratem, all right, you tell me. Not a bad way. You tell me, okay. So, Abu Lo, so they said to him, you know why? It says, "Vipnei she'ne'enu misudoso shaloise rosha." Okay? So the reason is because the Jews enjoyed the banquet that Ahasuerus gave, you know, that wicked person gave in Shushan. That's the reason why. Okay? They enjoyed themselves at the party. So he answered them, he questioned them further, right? They gave him that answer, so he says, "Im Cain." So he says, "If that's the case, Sheb Shushan Yehorgu, Sheb Kolim Kuli Al Yehorgu." He says, "If that's the case, all right, then the Jews in Shushan who were there at the party, okay, so they should have been killed. But why should Jews throughout the world be killed? They weren't there at the party." So Amru Lo, so the student said to him, "Hey, Morato, all right, so you give us the reason. You tell us, okay?" So Amar Lahem, so he says, "I'll tell you. It was because they bowed down to the idol." In the book of Daniel, we read that Nebuchadnezzar made a statue of himself, an idol of himself, and he issued a decree that everybody in his kingdom at a certain hour, and he told them what day, what hour, and so every person in that kingdom had to bow down to the idol. Okay? So, according to the book of Daniel, only three refused to do it. Who were they? Mishael, Hananiah, and Azariah. Or as the Babylonians called them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Okay, they refused to bow down. Okay, that being the case, so they said, "Amru lo." So they said to him, "If that's the case, then why does the Rebbeinu Shel Olam play favorites?" In other words, as follows.
This must so funny.
Also, literally lifting up the countenance. You know, because it's written, Yisar Hashem, Bono Velecho, right? V'yosem L'hosho, in other words, may God lift up his countenance for you, meaning may God show you favor, right? And grant you peace. This is the idea. Okay?
Someone that's Masopani,
called
proud or
funny? No. Masopani means favoritism.
Favoritism.
So why did the Rebbeinu Shel Olam show favoritism in that what? Let's say Goyim would be punished for bowing down to the idol, but Jews would not be punished for it. Why shouldn't he punish the Jews for doing that? So, Omar Lahem, so he said to them, look, here's the story. Haim lo wasu ala lefonim. It says, the Jews, when they bowed down to the idol, they did it only as an outward appearance. In other words, They simply went along with everybody else because of what they would have faced, execution, right, if they didn't do it. But they didn't mean in their heart to do what? To accept idolatry.
That's like conversos.
Yeah.
Is that why they were forgiven too?
Yeah. Saying? Yeah. So Alpha Kodesh Baruch Hu, so Ben Shalem too, he says, Lo Yosei Mona Elen Fonim. When he threatened them with punishment, he only did it, you know, in order to throw a scare into them, but not that he really meant to destroy them. Okay? Understand? V'haydun d'chsiv, and therefore this is the meaning of the pasuk that we have in the book of Eichon, the book of Lamentations, which says, Ki lo ino milibo, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam does not torment us from his own heart. In other words, we bring upon ourselves different things, but the Rebbeinu Shel Olam did not really intend, in his heart he did not intend to do what? To punish the Jews for bowing down, because he knew that they were doing it only under duress and you know, not because they really believed it. Okay? Alright. Now the next pasuk that they deal with concerns the location of the party. Okay? Ahasuerus' party. Yes?
The vessels they were using the temple to protect, they were protection for the whole world. So if they're using it in a bad manner, it's probably had the opposite effect.
Right. Okay. Bachatzar Ginas Bisad HaMelech. Alright? It's written, where was the party held? It's written in the courtyard of the garden of the palace of the king. Alright? That's what it says, literally. Okay? So, why do they have so many different things mentioned, namely courtyard, garden, palace? So, Rabbi Shmuel, again, they had a difference of interpretation between them. Okay? Chad Omar, one of them said, you know why all these different things? He says, Chorowi lechotzer, lechotzer. Somebody who, let's say, of a certain rank, that he should stay in the courtyard. So he stayed in the courtyard. Horoi legino, those who deserve to be into the garden, which was already obviously a higher madriga or something like that. So he was permitted to go into the garden. And then Horoi lebison, lebison, right? And the person who deserved to be in the palace itself, so he was in the palace. That was his interpretation. But the other one had a different interpretation. He says, you know what happened? He says, first of all, Hoshua Bechotzer, Lohechzi Kosan. He says, first of all, he set up all the chairs and the banquets, tables, right where? In the yard. But there was such a crowd that they could not be accommodated over there. Okay. Bagino, then he moved the people into the garden. Right? And again, the same story. The garden was not big enough in order to accommodate all of them. Achech Nisan the Bisan, right? The Hechazikos. Okay. So finally, what did he have to do? He had to bring them actually into the palace itself. And there was room enough for everybody. Bimas Nisa. We have a Baraisa which has a somewhat different interpretation. It says, Hoshivon Bechotzer, first he brought him into the courtyard, right? And he opened for them two doors leading out of the courtyard, Echod Lagino and Echod Lebisan. One of them led to the garden and the other one to the palace. In other words, they had the free rein that they could go one place or another, whatever he wanted to do. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
You know, several times they talk about the God, Hamela.
Yeah.
Is there some significance to that?
Well, obviously, he had a beautiful garden where he liked to promenade, relax. Maybe went sunbathing over there, I don't know. But,
maybe he had his little lady sunbathing for him.
That could be.
it's the tree.
They mention it several times.
Right, it is, it's true. But obviously he had a beautiful place and he liked it. It was part of the royal domain, you know.
In the Megillah, it says this party, am I right, the party went for 180 days,
yes.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Would that affect these interpretations at all?
Here they don't speak about it. Okay. As I said, they didn't really interpret each and every word, but wherever they felt that there was something that they wanted to comment on, so they commented on. Okay? Well, you mean that it was hot inside, so they went to the garden to cool off. Okay, that's fine.
If it
right.
was a half a year long yeah. party, you'd have yeah. two different climates.
Right, right. Okay. All right. We continue. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Then, at the party, they speak about the very beautiful furnishings that the people who came enjoyed in the royal palace, all right? It's written over there, Hur Karpas Uschedes, okay? So the first question is, what does Hur mean? Second one is, what does Karpas mean? And the third one, what does Uschedes mean? Okay? So now they're going to explain what each one is. It says, my Hur. What do we mean by the word Hur? So Rav Omar, Chari Chari, okay? Says that it is chori chori, which means, he says, that it is needlework. Take a look at the Rashi, it's right at the side over there. It says, chori chori says, ma'ase machat meleches ha'matzoi, so he saw suya nekob nekobim. Okay. He says that there was very intricate needlework that was done over there, and that is how they made the various coverlets, you know, for the the couches upon which they reclined. Okay, Ushmuel Omar, he gave a different interpretation. He says, you know what Chori is? He says it's Melas Levona, which could mean either that it was white. Some say that Melas is velvet, and others say that Melas is fine wool, white wool, or something like that. Now, how does he connect? So Rashi explains, because the word chur is related to the word chiver. Chiver in Hebrew means pale or white. Okay? So that's why he suggested. Right. Then the next one that we said, you know, karpas, right, was chelis, right. So, yeah, in other words, that he covered the couches, you know, like the bedding that he put down on the couch was made of, you know, very beautiful, intricate, or white material. Okay. What is karpas? Of course, if I were to ask you Pesach, I would get a different answer.
Right.
Okay.
You didn't have parsley.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, karpas, Omar Oyser Bar Chanina, he said, you know what karpas is? He says, it's korim shel pasim, which means what? Kar, you see, right? So that is the Hebrew word which means a pillow, among other meanings of the word. Okay? And pas says, take a look at this week's Sedra. What did the Yaakov Avinu give to his son Yosef as a sign of favoritism? So does pasim, right? He gave him a cloak of pasim. Now, the question is only, what does pasim mean? So, one interpretation is that pasim, I mean, the modern Hebrew, they use it to mean like a stripe. In other words, he gave him a garment, stripe, the cloth, something like that. But there are others who say, no, it wants to show something that he gave him a garment of very precious material, in other words, very expensive, a very expensive garment, okay? So, all right, at any rate, karpas, the pillows use the finest material, okay?
Is it spelled the same as the other word? Karpas?
Yes, yeah. Yes, of course, absolutely. That's why I said, I mean, if it were Pesach, it would be a different meaning. Okay. Yeah. Then it's written, you know, that they had hangings, what? Al-Gadilei Chesef V'Amudei Sheish, right? That they were and rods of silver and columns of marble, right? And then what else? And then came mitos of Hovokesef, right? And they had literally beds, but it means over here like couches, right? Made of gold and silver, okay? I guess he didn't go to Bob's Discount.
Sounds a little garish to me. He did go to Bob's Discount.
Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Ibn Rabbi Yehuda says, Horowi lekesef, lekesef, noi lezohav, lezohav. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you know why it says zohav lekesef, right? So kesef is zohav. Yeah, zohav lekesef. He says, I'll tell you, if a person deserved to be on a golden couch, so he was on a golden couch. If he deserved to be on a silver couch, then he was on a silver couch. Yeah, yeah. Sounds good, right?
You
were right, right.
Yeah. In the journal, the gold page, the silver page.
Yeah, right, right, exactly, right, 100% right. So
Amalei.
Yeah. So Amalei Rabbi Nechemya. So Rabbi Nechemya said to Rabbi Yehuda, "Hey, he says, Im keina tomatul kino basiuda." If that's the case, you're going to make everyone jealous of the other person at this party. They'll spoil the party because each one will be jealous. You know, the guy who's in civil will say, why wasn't I given a golden couch, right? So he says, Elo, heim shel kesef, rak leim shel zohav. But he says, you know what? The couches were made of silver, but the feet of the couches were made of gold.
Okay.
So that way everybody got the same type of furniture. Okay? Then, another description. it's written out, Ritzpas Bahat Vashesh Bedar V'Sochoris. That's what the
Pasuk says.
Yeah. So, in other words, the flooring upon which it was made of Bahat and Shesh. Yeah. So the question is, so what's Bahat Vashesh? Right? Reminds me of a famous story. Again, you know, it's written about the manna, the man, right? That it was like it's a piches bin vash, which we translate like a wafer with honey. In other words, it's very, very sweet. Very sweet to the taste, okay? But somebody, you know, a kid asked the Rebbe, he says, tell me what is Tzapiches Bidvash? So he said to him, what do you mean Tzapiches Bidvash? He said, Tzapiches Bidvash.
In other words, you know, can't devise it.
Right, right, right. So Omar Abasi, so he wants to explain what is Bahad Vashesh, he says. You know what they are? He says, Avodim Shemizchotetos Al Ba'aleyem. Right, he says, this means that they had precious stones. Not a bad floor, right? Made out of precious stones that mischototos habaleihem, which means literally that the people who want them or who possess them, they have to dig deep in order to find them. Okay, Rashi. He explains, he says, Ritzpo Osalahem, he made them a flooring, right? Ba'avonim Chatutos, with stones that were cut out specially for them, okay? As we see, you know, they're different in the interpretation of what it means. Klomer, which means, Rashi explains, Shelo bo lidei odom ela b'teirach, says, in order to get them, people had to struggle hard. They had to work hard in order to be able to get them from the earth.
They're mining.
Right.
Right,
so they had to be mined.
Yeah,
right.
It could be mined.
There
wasn't
right.
something that they found.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
right.
The quarries, you say.
Yeah.
Exactly, like diamonds or something like that. And therefore he says, Ad shemotzun oson bedomim yikarim. So that finally they were brought forth, they were brought out, and they cost a lot of money. So in other words, he used very, very precious stones for the flooring over there.
So what does the word lechatech mean exactly?
Yeah, it means literally to go digging for, to go scratching for. Yeah, they use it in the sense of scratching.
Okay.
right? Because, you know, I have to scratch out in order to get that. The Chenu Omer, and likewise we have the Pasuk in Zechariah where it says, Avnei Nezer, they are stones of a crown, is Nosis Olad Basar, that are literally flying over the land, but it doesn't mean it's Nosis Olad in the sense of flying over here, but it means that the people in Rashi again explains, he says. Yeah. That these stones are precious because, and they have to come with a great deal of difficulty. Have to work hard to get them. He says, "He avne nezer misnosis elad mosei," which means that the Rebbeinu that the pasuk is talking about the Dabir Yisrael, the Osid Lovi, talking about the people of Israel in the future, sheyu chashuvim yekorim ben umos, that they will be important and precious among the various nations, as precious jewels. In other words, people will eventually come to recognize the beauty and the preciousness of the Jewish people. We have a few people who are recognized, but unfortunately, the others submit and they're never happy. Yes.
And they go into, I know they're going to keep going on and on,
yeah,
but the way they send a lot of descriptive effort in,
right,
must have been purposeful,
yes,
to show the effort.